When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
Listening to Acton Millwall Emergency Broadcasting Special, a public service broadcast made on behalf of the Real Millwall Fan Show and Acton Millwall, broadcasting from South Bermondsey.
Well, good evening, dear listeners. Welcome to it's actually a special request show. This show has been requested by Fleur Sharman. Thank you, Fleur, for making this very well pitched request. She asked for a review show like we did the other day on the YouTube, the 70s YouTube show. She asked if we could do a similar thing for the two classic Sheffield Wednesday games in 1990. And I've added in, just for good measure, a 1992 fixture where we played Notts County. Joining me to review this historic footage is our most millennial of panellists. Good to have him back. The king of the Millwall blog. It's Ryan Loftus. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Good lockdown evening, everybody. Looking forward to this, and I'll step back down memory lane, well, not memory lane, but into the past for me, you know. Good chance to see 90s football in action.
Before you were conceived, I dare say, Mr. Loftus. There we are. Mm. Also joining us is a slightly longer in the tooth fixture on our panel. Welcome back to the show. And we haven't spoken for a little while, so it's nice to talk to Michael Avery. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me back, Nick. Hello, Ryan. Hello, everyone. Lockdown is lifted. We know what that means. The club shop will be open soon.
we're speaking on the day that Project Restart is kind of spitting and spluttering into some kind of life. The Bundesliga, I believe, returns this weekend. Ryan, I believe it's back behind closed doors over the weekend, am I right?
Yeah, back on, full package. It's should be a good one. All the tea. Pick out the Schalke Borussia Dortmund game if anyone watches it. The big derby, Bayern Munich on the Sunday, should be good.
I'm just hoping that Bayern Munich have got the cutout of Harry Warren that we sent them to put in the stands.
I think he's going in goal, actually, Michael.
I think the cutouts of H should be surrounding the left wing team, the brown shirted team, the one that Hamburg, what do I call them?
Hamburg.
No, not the Hamburg. There's another team in Hamburg. I can't think of their name now. There's a trendy, like the Dulwich Hamlet crowd.
Oh, support.
I think Harry should populate their stadium and around the creche and the various right on sections of the ground with loads of little cutouts of Harry in a replica, whatever the team's name shirt, it's gone from my mind. Listeners will correct me, no doubt. But I digress, dear listeners. We are going to look back. Bundesliga, Schmundesliga, we're going to be looking back to the classic days of Cold Blow Lane. Ryan Loftus, this is a ground and a half. And the first of our games that Fleur has asked us to review is a wonderful game. I was there this day. Millwall 4, Sheffield Wednesday 2, played on the 2010th of October 1990 in the old Division 2 at Cold Blow Lane. It's actually a decent piece of footage on YouTube. I will be sending out links to for games, and I've turned the sound off my phone, so I'm just going to let it run there whilst we talk. Wonderful footage, Ryan. Did you ever get a chance to have a look at the YouTube footage?
I had to watch it a couple of times because I was a bit confused by it, because I think it showed footage of a Millwall team coming from 2-0 down to win a game rather than going from 2-0 up and losing it. So I was
absolutely
it was a hope. Wonderful. Yeah, it was good footage. Nice highlight reel, you know. So it was interesting to see. I've not seen many games of the Cobble Lane, you know, games at the old Den. So it was nice to see, get a little trip down memory lane like that.
It looks very different. I mean, obviously, it's shot in old school video. Mike, I might have asked you this before. Did you ever get a chance to go to Cobble Lane, or did you just catch the end of it at all?
I did catch the end of it. I was born in '86, so I was just old enough to start going. Luckily, after we'd been relegated from the first division, so I missed all of that. But I remember the old Den vividly. And I'll tell you what. Funny thing you say about the camera quality and like the sort of video quality. One, my actual first note, so I made some notes on this when I first watched it. I actually thought the opening 20, 30 seconds, I'm not sure whether whoever was filming sort of was on speed or something like that. But it's very 100 miles an hour, the way the camera's moving around, isn't it?
Someone asked on Twitter the other day, what was the first World Cup you remember? No, the first World Cup that I remember was 1974. And the reason it stands out in my mind is my dad bought our very first colour telly. So that we could watch the World Cup, which was being played in West Germany in 1974. And I remember he put this huge roof aerial. We had a house in Mottingham on the estate there. And he put a roof aerial, which is pointed directly at Crystal Palace. So I'm sure if I saw the picture now, it would look like this footage here on YouTube. At the time, it seemed like it was razor sharp, almost, 625 lines with a razor sharp HD level, as it would have seemed to me then. But I think if I was to magically be transported back to those times, it would look very much like the footage that we're looking at here of the 4-2 win. It's amazing how your standards of TV imagery you can just take it for granted now. You just take as a matter of fact that you're going to get HD images from anywhere in the world now. It's quite incredible.
Very few now do you see the sort of blurry line at the bottom of the screen where the VHS was a bit grubby.
Back then, HD was impossible from New Cross, let alone anywhere outside the country. So, but this is a wonderful match, managed by Bruce Rioch at the time, and I don't know if either of you chaps have had a chance to listen to the Endors interview that I did the other day. Who actually plays in this team, I believe, in all three of these games, Dorsey. He was, for a mild-mannered bloke, he was quite unimpressed with Bruce Rioch, who apparently had a kind of a militaristic sergeant major style of approach. No jeans, blazers, shirts and ties type of approach.
I was going to say, with Ian Dawes, watching these videos back again, yeah. I mean, I sort of grew up with Ian Dawes as the sort of Mill fullback. You sort of half forget how good he was, don't you? And I know that you said in your description to your interviews with him and your tweet you put out, you know, he was probably one of your favourite fullbacks to play, or probably one of your favourite players, or one of the best players you saw in that position. But
absolutely,
he really was a good player, wasn't he? And, you know, watching this reminds you just how sort of lucky we was to have him at the time, really.
Yeah, I mean, this era of Millwall, I'm just looking at the footage playing as we're speaking. It was Rioch was, although he was a very odd combination of a man, because he had this stern sergeant major style, brush your hair, brush your teeth, straighten your tie boy kind of approach. Yet the football we played was the first time, really, I think, that I saw a Millwall side actually play the ball around with something like a modern passing style. You know, we've always been a fairly direct side, and you know, certainly in the first division days, it was Cascarino and Sheringham and get the ball forwards. And I'm interested to hear Ryan's takes. You're an analyst, Ryan. You are a football analyst of the future, and it's interesting to watch this old school, because this was quite attractive football that we were watching at the time. It felt that way very much.
That did stand out to me. There's quite a few, I think, across three of the clips we watch, but especially in this the 4-2 one against Wednesday. There's quite a few nice passages of play, nice passing moves. Like, you do get to see a bit of, obviously, they're only short highlights, so you can't see the full games, but you do get to see a bit of Doors going forward and pushing on. You know, it's the sort of left we could probably do with now.
Absolutely.
I think it's interesting. Like you say, like, I was surprised at the lack of balls going into the box. One, in this 4-2-1, I've got it running as well at the same time. And I think in the Notts County one that we're going to watch later on, Malcolm Allen stands out to me as a really skillful player. He's not someone I don't think I've registered before. I think I recognised most of the names when he sent over the team sheets.
Yeah.
But he was one I just didn't really recognise. And I'm watching these games, he gets a handful of goals in all of these. And some of the skills, or, you know, he looks very good on the ball, beating players and dribbling past them. I mean, I wonder, what do you think of him at the time? Was he a player that stood out like that? Or is it just are these just beneficial clips for him?
No. He's a very good player. He joined us, I think it was the season we were relegated. It might have been at the very end of the first division, 89-90. We'd lost Cascarino at the end of the second year in the first division. He'd moved on to Chelsea and Villa. But he would go on to other clubs. And Malcolm Allen came to us from Norwich. And at the time, in the first division days, Norwich had a bit of a reputation of being a footballing side, a team that played the ball around. And a bit like, you know, this kind of myth of the West Ham way. You know, there was an idea that Norwich played attractive sunshine football. And Malcolm Allen was very much part of the Norwich team. He came to us. I was slightly surprised when he came to us, because I'd always thought of him as being part of this, you know, not your kind of classic Mill player in many respects. But he certainly was a good finisher of the ball. He was skillful on the ball. And it was a great signing and very well thought of. It might suit to actually read out the team, because we're managed by Bruce Rioch, who, as much as we damn Bruce Rioch for his stern style, was a very good judge of a player. And he brought, kind of players in that fitted together very well. He had both an old-fashioned quality and a modern quality in one man. It was quite weird, really. But the Mill team this day is Keith Branigan in goal. Then we've got Keith Stevens, Ian Dawes, Gary Woddock, Stevie Wood, still one of the First Division side. Alan McCleary, the defender from the First Division days, will go on to manage, along with Rhino, later in the the Third Division. Jimmy Carter, Malcolm Allen, Teddy Sheringham, Alex Ray and Kevin O'Callaghan. And then substitutes Paul Stevenson and Tony McCarthy, I believe. No, it might be Mick McCarthy. On the bench. An attractive side. And it was an interesting game to look at, really, because obviously we went 2-0 down fairly early in the game. Two goals from David Hurst, who's an interesting striker for Sheffield Wednesday in the 14th minute and the 16th minute, and actually missed a few other chances in the first half to probably put the game out of sight. 3-0 or 4-0 could have been by half time. It was an open game. A lot of chances, Michael. A lot of opportunities for both sides.
And then funny thing you were saying, like, Mill will probably deserve the, you know, sort of deserve to get back in it and everything like that. But the thing that struck me with the first few minutes is just how well, and I know this is obviously a sort of highlights video, so, you know, you're not going to put in the ones that go 30 yards wide. But, you know, what struck me with, and touching on about how good these teams were back then, and all the pace of the game, I thought it was so fast-paced, especially from Sheffield Wednesday in the early stages. A lot of one-touch football, a lot of two-touch football. And even when they had the free kick from outside the box, you know, there was the sort of step over, which not many teams at that time did, and he curled it and it hit the bar. And you think, well, That whole build up with the dummy and the curl in it, that wouldn't look out of place in today's game. And this was, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, it's interesting you say 30 years ago. It doesn't seem that long ago to me. It seems kind of relatively recent, but it is 30 years ago. You're correct. Almost 30 years. It's interesting. I mean, when you look at the Sheffield Wednesday side, if you listen to the commentary, some of the names that get dropped along the way on the Wednesday team, they're Nigel Pearson, Nigel Worthington. They had a player called Roland Nielsen, who I think puts a cross in for their first goal for David Hurst. Carlton Palmer, and of course Kevin Pressman, who had come back as a coach at the Den later on in his career. They were not bad sides, and they had players that could play. And as you can see in the footage, they passed the ball around, and we kind of I think we caught a little bit cold in the first half. It was a lovely goal from Hurst. It's just gone in the net as I'm playing it now. Cross in. It's a real kind of striker's instinctive goal.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I saw it for the first time. A real good poaching goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, and a very decent striker, David Hurst. Played for England a few times anyway. 352 appearances in his career, 124 goals. So he was a well-reputed goal scorer. But also, Pearson were going to manage Leicester. Carlton Palmer, I always felt sorry that Carlton Palmer used to be treated as something of a joke. So I thought he was a decent player and he'd play for England as well. But they forced themselves two goals. There's a nice finish from Hurst coasting down the middle there. And I think they miss a chance after that, Ryan, don't they? There's another chance. They hit the crossbar another chance goes close before half-time.
Brannigan makes a save and then, they hit the bar with the free kick and the rebound. I don't know who is trying to get it in, but the rebound off the free kick off the bar could have been turned in. But, Pressman, I think, before Millwall score one, Pressman makes about three or four really, really good saves. I think they mentioned in the video, or if it's the next one, he was under-21's keeper at the time.
Who
knows? We're looking at a young Kevin Pressman, much slimmer than he is these days. He wayward shot and it's pulled back in. And I think it's Allen from about the 6-yard box, I think early in the second half, and he tries to score and Pressman tips over the bar. So, like you say,
it's a fantastic save, isn't it? Really is a top draw save there.
Yeah, some really good quality on the pitch. And like you say, not just in terms of the calibre of player and what they kind of come on to do, but on the pitch on the day, the passing and the attempts and the keepers at either end, for a game that's got six goals, you wouldn't expect the goalkeepers to be having such good games, really.
No, it was an open game. I think probably we were a better team going forwards than we were in defence at this point. Although we've got Wood and McCleary, who were rock solid in Division 1, but I think there was certainly an open feel. I think Rioch's philosophy was that you played the ball around rather than got it forward early. There it is. I just hit the crossbar from a free kick from outside the box there. So we possibly should have been 3-0 down at half-time. The pitch is interesting. I don't know if you picked up on that, Ryan. It's got a lot of divots and it's got a scuffed kind of look to it, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just the camera. I might be doing it a disservice, but it's not looking too far off the den just before football was cancelled. it's not on it. It's a classic 90s pitch. Actually, I think it's better than what 90s pitches would go by. It's plenty of green in it. Not too many bobbles going around, but It's interesting that the stands, like the old den, I very rarely, like I said, very rarely see it from the inside on highlights videos and things. But see that closeness it's got to the pitch. The terraces behind it is always a shame that I never got to go. It does look like football. The crowd, the noise really kind of struck me in the video. I don't know how kind of high the levels are brought up or whatever, but for was it about 13,000 there, and it's a lot of noise, and it comes across quite well in the video.
I like the way the commentator when Millwall score go jubilant as ever are the Millwall fans. You think jubilant's a good word?
I mean, this was a big crowd by Coldblow Lane standards. You've got to say 12, nearly 13,000 in the old den was a big crowd. The noise was had its own quality to it. I think, we still have it. And I think sometimes, gentlemen of a certain vintage, like myself and others, tend to elevate this place as being a kind of mystical repository of a lost world, and the new den, the Zampa Road is a fantastic theatre of football. And on its day, in my opinion, matches anything Coldblow Lane could generate, and I certainly because this was our arena. Coldblow Lane had you approached it through railway arches and round the back of jagged glass fences and walls, and I once saw a dead rat laying in Coldblow Lane itself as you go into the football. It had this kind of Dickensian misty quality of Jack the Ripper kind of idea, So it does have this certain quality to it, but we still got a touch of it. I'm not particularly struck by the verdant fields of South Bermondsey when you walk along Zampa Road, are you? I mean, it still looks and feels like a light industrial area that's seen better days, and that's very much Millwall. That's what we are.
I think the big shame with the new den, and it's not really a shame with the new den, it's a shame with kind of all football stadium at the moment, you know, especially at a certain level, is the lack of terracing, the fact that it has to be all seater, you know.
Yeah.
There's reasons for bringing that in at the time when it was, but I think, you know, I've been to quite a lot of games at lower league sides, like Exeter when I was at university there. I went to Torquay quite a lot when I was there as well. Down at Chamlet I go to. So, like, the atmospheres in places that have terracing are good, and it's different. And I think if Millwall now had terracing, like you say, the acoustics are great, the noise levels are great, the closeness to the pitch, you know, yeah, we have that intimidation factor still. Like, opposition players have spoken about that. I think the terracing makes all the difference. I think when people are on their feet and the crowd is swaying and, you know, it's physically moving, you know, that's when it becomes that next level. And like you say, I think you can look back with a bit of misty-eyed, rose-tinted glasses at things in the past and think they're better than they were, and not to say that that is the case necessarily with the old den, but, you know, I think it's a shame for the new den that it is all seater.
Yeah, and I don't think realistically they're going to change that, to be honest. I think that will be the way it is and remains. I know Manchester United have got permission to safe standing now. It may happen. I've never detected any great enthusiasm from the club for that, which is a shame, because I think it would add to the, you know, on the flatter days, it would certainly add something to the ground.
Exactly. I think terracing would help if we got relegated with those Johnston Paint Trophy games, you know, really elevating the atmosphere of
the lowest attendance in Mill history was 900 people for the equivalent of a Johnston Paint Trophy in at Coldblow Lane. So you know, anyone that says it was better in the old days is generally, we weren't there really, or they're applying too much rose tint to it. Great finish for the opening goal for Mill from Jimmy Carter. Close range finish from a head back across the face of the goal. And that gave us a 2-1 foothold in the game, 58 minutes. And then I think Teddy equalises shortly afterwards, Ryan, I believe, 62 minutes. It's a Sheringham equaliser. I'm just winding this forward to see if I can see it now. Ball over the top. There it is. And it falls back into the path of Teddy, who actually almost threads it through the eye of the needle for a couple of legs to get it into the one spot that wasn't covered by anyone for two each.
The thing that, I mean, it's quite interesting. Obviously, like the Sheringham is, we spoke before, Nick, about players like Steve Morrison and all these players who can adapt their game. And Sheringham's always been the type who was always the creator, you know, during like the Euro 96 and like when he played for Spurs with Klinsmann, those type of players, he was always the creator. But like in an era where shirt numbers and kit numbers meant something, it felt a bit weird, you know, in hindsight, seeing Sheringham with a 9 on his back where he spent the rest of his career as a 10, you know?
Yeah, I always, you know, I mean, Sheringham, the early years of Sheringham, it was criticised a lot, and you can imagine what kind of criticism I'm talking about for being lazy. You know, he was felt to be a flash player, the one that went for the glory goal rather than the percentage goal, that kind of thing. But he matured. He was a linchpin in the promotion season and then the first division. And as you know, Cascarino moved on. We spoke to Cascarino a couple of weeks ago, and he moved on. And this season here, we've been relegated back to Division Two. And I still find it quite amazing, in truth. Teddy Sheringham stayed with us for that season. The club maybe didn't want to lose him, but he stayed with us. I think this was the season he scored 37 goals, was it? 38 goals in the season. He was an absolutely immense player. I mean, you know, even the third goal, I think he pulled wide. He's a striker. He's a centre forward, but he's always willing to pull out to the right side or the left side and put the ball in for somebody else to run onto. He had that kind of vision and creative quality you could see would flower with the likes of Manchester United, Tottenham later on in his career. I mean, you know, featuring the Euro 96 for England and then, you know, go on to greater things, win the European Cup. But I always felt you could see the quality of Teddy Sheringham, and this footage actually shows it if you look hard enough for it. Because I think he creates the 3-2, the Malcolm Allen goal, actually, Ron, the ball in from the right side, I believe.
Yeah, he just puts one wide just a bit before, I think. I don't know if it's Allen who puts him through, and he puts one from right into the box, and he puts one just wide. But it's an odd one because obviously Sheringham's obviously before my time, sorry, as a middle man, before my age. So I can only kind of go off numbers and what people say about him. And I know he's a divisive figure now down the dead, despite being, you know, his record speaks for itself. And it's an odd one because you think of all the players who've played for Millwall, he's probably, you know, how many Millwall players have, or who, especially from the such a young age, from like through the ranks and things, who've come through and, you know, won European Cups, played for England at the Euros, and, you know, it's an odd one that Millwall's relationship, Millwall fans' relationship with him is mixed at best. You know, for he should be a player that the club takes immense pride in, you would imagine, from the outside looking in.
In my opinion, and you know, I'd be interested to know what listeners think out there, because I think anyone that attended the Den during the promotion and the first division days, and then the 1990-91 season, which is the one we're looking at, he's not a divisive figure at all. He for me, he remains the best player I've ever seen in the Millwall shirt. It becomes divisive, I think, for those that didn't see him play for Millwall. Maybe they're the ones that have known him as a late period, you know, he played for West Ham, he played for, he went around a few teams in the end.
Portsmouth and Colchester and places Portsmouth, like that.
Colchester. He's stringing out his career.
And he's going to Redbridge, isn't it? Yeah.
And he'd always say he supported him as a kid, stuff like that. And people get very, you know, emotive over that. I always come back to Division 1, promotion Division 1 and this season. And he could say he supported whoever you like, as far as I'm concerned, because if you do this for Millwall, then you're a Millwall legend in the true sense of the word. It's actually the fourth goal he pulls wide right and puts the ball in. It's Alex Ray that gets the 4-2 in the 90th minute to seal the win.
Malcolm Allen's goal, the third goal, is absolutely phenomenal, really. That would be on highlights reels. He picks it up from the left. He does a little drag in through the defender's legs. You know, nutmegs the defender who's covering with a little drag, a little feint, and then puts it through Pressman's legs as well for the finish. You know, those little bits. There's a few. I mean, he missed probably two or three chances before, or not missed, but Pressman pulled off some really good saves for them. It just shocked me. It really stood out. It was like, I don't think I'd ever heard of Malcolm Allen before, and it was just insane how good he seemed. He seemed like a genuinely silky, skillful player pulling out tricks. And
the thing is as well, if you look at Sheringham's with his goal, I'm not sure if you heard it with the commentator, but they go, oh, that's his 10th of the season. And you think, well, you know, this game was like, well, I believe it was October, wasn't it? And yet you think, 10 goals for 10. He's already got 10 by October. And then when Alex Ray scores his header, that's his sixth goal. You think a centre midfielder or an attacking midfielder getting six goals by October is a ridiculous stat.
I mean, this was the season, I think we finished up in the playoffs this season, I believe, where we went out to Brighton in the playoffs, which is a bit of a gutty way for it to finish. But yeah, I mean, 38 goals, I think, in a season is at any level is speaks volumes for the striker. So this was Millwall 4, Sheffield Wednesday 2, 27th of October 1990. A great day.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
But we're going to match that now, chaps. We're going to move along to early 1991, an FA Cup fourth round between, again, Millwall and Sheffield Wednesday. And this one finishes a 4-4 draw. And it's been a long while since I've looked at this. I was there this day. And it's been a long while since I've seen it or thought about this game. But it was a much more chaotic game in a funny kind of way, wasn't it? I mean, even the opening goal was, I think, inside the first minute, and that was Paul Stevenson.
Mad scramble.
Scramble.
To say the least.
And it falls to him. And then you see the manic reaction on that's the Alderton Road terracing behind. And it's, you know, you just get a sense of the mania that then could produce when, you know, madcap things happen there. So, yeah, 1 minute in, then we're a goal up through Paul Stevenson, who was a great player. His main claim to fame was he scored the goal at Anfield when we went to play Liverpool in the first division season. We went down and went a goal up and finished drawing one each by the end. But it was a huge performance. And Paul Stevenson was a very, very talented winger. I think he came from Newcastle, and I think he went back in the end to Hartlepool. I think he finished up playing for Hartlepool at some point. May even have played against us in one of the cup games. I think we got beat up at Hartlepool in one season's FA Cup. But he was a great, great winger, Paul Stevenson. And again, a little bit like Malcolm Allen, Ryan, you know, the kind of name you don't really hear very often anymore, you know. But he played a big part in our first division season.
It's interesting, like the names that you look back, the ones that do stay in kind of Millwall memory. I mean, obviously it depends on how different people kind of come across different names. But like I said, a lot of the names in this team I do recognise and pick out. It's odd the ones that do pass you by, like Stevenson. Yeah, would be one that I wouldn't have come to mind. But then there's plenty others in this team who I'd at least recognise, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
This game is a lot more mad end to end.
I mean, this is just a goals fest. It's about 1:25, listeners. And if you want to go onto YouTube, and as I say, I will stick the link on this. This has just come from one of those kind of end of season goal videos you used to get. Do you remember those, Michael? You used to get that used to go and buy them from the club shop. Mill's goals for the season.
As an expert of club shop memorabilia, Nick.
That's what I'm asking.
I do remember those. But I'll tell you what, I'm not sure about you, Nick. And this is aimed at the millennial of Ryan and that millennial age. But a lot of people say about the magic of the FA Cup and all this, but I'm not sure the way it's presented, but the thing that struck me when this first like video started was it really is a beautiful trophy, isn't it? And it meant so much in those late 80s and early 90s, you know? It really, really was. And it struck me like that, though. It felt like a real like FA Cup tie, like the clichéd ones.
Yeah. Well, this is 1991. This will be the last season, I believe. Maybe one more season of the old football league, as it was. So the Premier League, I believe, started in 1992-93. So that's when the Premier League starts to take its grip on big time football, which it's never ever lost. So this was like it's a glimpse into a different time. And yeah, I mean, the decline of the FA Cup probably begins from here. I think there was one season where Manchester United didn't play in it. I think that was towards the end of the 90s.
And so because they had the Club World Cup after winning the Champions League.
That's right.
I think after the treble. How Liverpool played in it this year, but they didn't. Yeah. But Liverpool had to rearrange and have the kids playing instead. I think United actually got that year off.
I mean, this was still the Cup then was still seen as something you wanted to win rather than the slow, inexorable sense that it was a bit of a pain in the arse, you know, and this. And you only put the kids out and you didn't take it seriously unless you got to the quarterfinals or semis, perhaps. But this was still just about in an era where teams would go at it for an FA Cup game. And this is a great, great old school, old fashioned cup tie because it's end to end stuff. And, you know, goals are flying in. 12th minute equaliser again for David Hurst. I've just watched that on my iPhone.
Interesting. I pick up on what Michael said about the FA Cup with the kind of magic of it. I don't know if it's... It does kind of... It has obviously waned. I think as a Millwall fan, it is still kind of special in a sense because of the cup final, obviously, when I was young, and Millwall have kind of not always done well in it, but we've done well in it enough times for it to remain.
We've done mistakes,
you know,
in it. Yeah.
I think we've done better than I think anyone else outside of the Premiership, and it is. It's one of those where as teams just kind of get richer and the divide grows, it gets just boring because it gets predictable. I think I'm looking through the winners now, and it's for a long time, it's pretty much just United, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, you know, who are the winners or are finalists. There's a few, obviously, ones that stand out, but it does just end up being predictable. And, you know, beforehand, it's, you know, it was a bit more of a free-for-all. Anyone could get to the final. And I think it just, that monotony of it, and I think that comes, like Nick's saying, with the growth of the Premier League and then the money kind of splitting and separating teams in terms of what they can achieve. It does just, you know, it takes away from it because you lose the magic of a cup where... you can't win. I think Millwall have a good connection with it because we're not necessarily interested in the winning. We're interested in ruining a few people's days along the way.
Precisely. So yeah,
we like upsetting the apple cart. We like knocking out the big teams. And everyone does, but I think as Millwall as a club, we're aware that we're probably not going to win the FA Cup. But if we can knock out a few Premier League teams who think they're better than us, we'll more than happily do that.
I mean, the cup tie of all time is obviously the win over Leicester a couple of years ago, which what you just said there, Ryan, I mean, it almost defines it, it's everything, isn't it? It's the ultimate underdog versus big club situation.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
Let's just read out the team for this game, Millwall 4, Sheffield Wednesday 4, 26th of January 1991. It's like change from the previous game. You've got Brian Hall in goal now, Keith Stevens, Ian Dawes, Gary Waddock, who's a divisive player. You want divisive players. Gary Waddock, some people liked him, I never liked him, but there we are, long while ago now. Steve Wood, Alan McCleary, Paul Stevenson, John Goodman, great player, fast, speedy, nippy forward, John Goodman, Teddy Sheringham, Alex Ray, who you see more in this game than I think the previous footage, Kevin O'Callaghan. And then on the subs bench is John McGlashan and Malcolm Allen. The equalising goal, chaps, for Alex Ray. I mean, I don't know if any of you have seen Alex Ray in his pomp. He was a fantastic midfielder.
Oh, phenomenal player. Really, really good player. I liked Alex Ray a lot growing up. He was a real... He was one of those exciting players that when you're a young kid around 10, 11 years old, you always like watching him. I thought he was a great player. Sorry to cut you off, Nick.
No. I mean, you said it, and I was interested to hear your viewpoint because Alex Ray, for me, a bit like Jimmy Carter and Paul Ifill, and back in the 70s, the likes of Trevor Lee and Gordon Hill and players like that are players that you sit up when they get the ball. You lean. What they're going to do? You don't know what they're going to do. Sometimes they're not aware what they're going to do. They're going to do something, and Alex Ray was a. He was brave, he was hard tackling, he was creative, which is always a quality. And I go back to Malcolm Allen that you've mentioned, Ryan, who was brave, industrious, strong and creative. And that's always a quality that I think sometimes it doesn't arrive very often at Millwall. But when it does, and Alex Ray's a great example, produces really, you know, almost the epitome of a Millwall midfielder. He was a wonderful, wonderful player. And I've just watched him equalising, bravely gone flying into a knockdown, I think, from the goalkeeper, bats it down, and he kind of comes in to make it 2-2 just before the half-time break. So we go 3-2 down into the second half, and once again, it's Teddy to, you know, we thought at the time, put us back into it, 3-8. I mean, as we've said a few times, a great striker, but we managed to try to concede. I think that's Viv Anderson late on 85 minutes from the corner. I believe it's Viv Anderson, heads in close. And I must admit, at the time, I thought the game was lost at this point, 3-4 down with 5 minutes to go. Viv Anderson's an interesting character. I don't know if either of you are aware of his place in football history. He was the first black player to play for England.
Very influential player.
A very good player,
very highly spoke of as well. Yeah, I mean, obviously a bit before my time, but you know, obviously looking back on articles and up. But hasn't he got an MBE or an ODE or something like that?
I believe so.
He's got an honour, isn't he?
MBE. It's MBE. Yeah.
MBE. I mean, in those days, I mean, obviously there was, I believe there may have been like still a few tensions. So for him to really break into the first team, or the England team was a real statement. So yeah, it was
absolutely
good to see him play.
I mean, he came from the same era as the likes of Cyril Regis, our own Trevor Lee and Phil Walk, and I think the role of Millwall in, you know, is often overlooked because there's an easy, you know, it's an easy stereotype that many, many people make about Millwall Football Club. But we were at the forefront of bringing in black players in the shape of Trevor Lee and Phil Walker. And it was at the same era as Viv Anderson and Laurie Cunningham, Cyril Regis and Des Walker, I think, was around about this time as well. And the thing to say with Viv Anderson, he's probably at the back end of his time as an England player at this point. But he was there on merit. He's a bloody good player. But he scored the fourth goal for Sheffield Wednesday in the 85th minute, which was a left-sided corner and headed in from close range. And some might have felt that was the end of the story, but it wasn't, because there was a late equaliser from Mr. Ray inside the six-yard box. No, it's just gone in the net as I was talking to you there. And it made it 4-4. Wonderful.
It's a much
wonderful
more frantic game than the first. Much more frantic. I wanted to know as well, actually, what was interesting, because obviously Sheffield Wednesday are a big kind of traditional English club. I mean, for me, I always find it interesting that, you know, when you talk about the big clubs in terms of, like, so Forest obviously are a big English club historically, but for me, not so much, because kind of their stature and their success and their pomp was before I was alive. When we would play Sheffield Wednesday in these sort of games at this sort of time, how big an occasion was it? Was it licking your lips like a big club coming to the Den? And, you know, was it a bit of a scalp, or was it just kind of another fixture?
It was another second division game in all truth. I mean, the difference with, say, Forest at this time was Forest were managed by Brian Clough, who's rightly a legend in the game and stands up in modern era, I think, as a major, major influence. They'd not long won the European Cup in 1980. They'd been in the first division until I think they're into the 90s. I think they were a first division side. They were provably a European first division level side, you know, one of the big names of the game. I think Sheffield Wednesday's heyday had been in the kind of 1950s, and to some extent I think in the early 60s, but they hadn't been a major club for some time. So although Hillsborough was a big ground and it was a semi-final venue, FA Cup semi-final venue, I don't think there was anything particularly in a trip to, you know, a visit from Sheffield Wednesday other than the usual the Millwall quality of hating everybody that comes to the Den and wanting to beat them, you know.
So that note, Nick, I mean, I always remember growing up, and ironically, you were saying about the magic of the cup and everything like that, and I was a bit more sort of unpredictable in those times. This season, even though this was an FA Cup game, when I looked back on it, this season, Sheffield Wednesday, as a second division club, won the League Cup against Man United at Wembley.
Yeah, you used to get second. I mean, hard to say it out loud, but West Ham won the FA Cup as a second division side against Arsenal. It would happen. Although big clubs were big back then, and, you know, top players still played for the Manchester Uniteds and the Liverpools and the Arsenals, the game has become so distorted. It's quite incredible. You can't really put into words how far apart now teams are in terms of wealth. You know, it's beyond description. Back then, there was still an outside chance that, I think Southampton beat Manchester United. I believe they were second division as well in the FA Cup in the 1970s. So it was still possible. You know, in general, a first division side would always expect to beat a second division side, but upsets were not impossible. And in big game situations too, which was interesting.
It's quite funny as well, like, because this was a busy couple of years for Sheffield Wednesday. Again, going back to it, I remember it was only a couple of years later that they played Arsenal in sort of consecutive cup finals in the same season, didn't they? They played them in the League Cup final.
I'm looking at that now. Yeah, they lost to Arsenal in the FA Cup final in 92-93 after a replay.
In this game, Trevor Francis was playing for Sheffield Wednesday as well. And again, I think this was prior to him going to Italy, but he was a big name in his own right. I think he went on to Sampdoria. Because Gascoigne would have gone to Lazio, I think, in 91, 92. So there was a bit of an exodus for players to go and get some experience playing abroad. But there was still a touch of the exotic about any team that had foreign players playing for them. We we didn't really. We had Casey Keller, who was American, and he.
We still don't, Nick. To be honest, we don't have many walking through the doors, do we?
No, we more than you think. But you're right. I mean, in general, no. But we do get it right sometimes. And Keller, in actual fact,
I think it was those Russians put us off of them.
Don't really mention the Russians.
I think they might have put the club off of them for a while.
The Russians. I'm gonna do a whole show on the Russians one day, because I think they deserve it. They're a wonderful couple of characters, really. I mean, it's a long while ago now, but they still hurt. But there we are. Just to close out on the 4-4 draw there. That's Mill 4, Wednesday 4, FA Cup 4th round, 26th of Jan 1991. We were Drangey for a dramatic game. We'd lose a far less dramatic replay a couple of days later, 2-0, because the FA Cup games then were decided just a few days later. The replay would be in the week following the Saturday game, whereas now you have to have 10 days, I think. We got beat up there 2-0, so that was the end of the Cup run. But two wonderful choices. Thank you to Fleur for choosing those two games. It's wonderful to look back at it on the YouTube. It's a great thing to bring back memories, especially when you were there. It's quite odd. This will come to you, Ryan, one day. You'll look back at games that seem like yesterday and think, oh, Jesus, that was 30 years ago. You know, it's quite a weird thing, because you can remember the moments and see it after all this time. The equalisers going in, the Alex Ray goals from close and all that. It's an odd thing.
Before we move on to Notts County, can we have an honourable mention to the Sheffield Wednesday game in the mid-2000s, where there was the goal that weren't given after celebrating, and Sheffield Wednesday ran to the other end and scored and relegated us?
Oh, blimey. That was in the 2005-06 relegation season. They scored. Did we have a goal disallowed or something like that?
It was a corner coming from... Was you there, Ryan? Oh, you might have been.
No,
was you there? This is when we were graced with players such as Barry Powell, who to this day... is I can always hear my uncle's words ringing in my ear. They should have given Barry Powell a chance. But I always remember, and I think it was on the front of the Lions draws, they actually had the photo of the gold mouth action, but I believe it was Tony Craig. He curled a corner in, it went in. We went off to celebrate because I think the referee put his arm up for the foul, but we thought it was a goal kick. I think it was Mr. Bye for now that condemned us to relegation, because he put on Let Them Come. We all celebrated, and then while we were celebrating, they ran down the other end and scored.
That was it. Yeah, we went ahead. That was it. That was the goal that was disallowed. Then they've gone down and scored, as you say. And the referee was, it wasn't Kevin Friend. It was another one. I forget his name now. But no, that was a shocking occasion. You've reopened deep psychological wounds by mentioning that game. I'd forgotten about that. And now it's all come back to me. But yeah, thanks, Fleur. Let's move along. We're going to close our little piece today, listeners, with a wonderful game. I'd actually forgotten this. I was looking for a third game, because as Fleur suggested, the two Wednesday games, and I thought, well, we'll do three just to make a neat show. So I've chosen this one. This is my choice. Mill 6, Notts County 1, in the old Division 1, second tier, in 19th of September 1992. This is still at Coldblow Lane. Listeners, by now, this was the last season of Coldblow Lane. We were to move out in the end of the 92-93 season. So at this point, Zampa Road would have been in construction. I remember it being built. I used to live near the ground at that point, and just walk around and look at it and gawp at it and wonder at it, because it was a wondrous thing for us to be building a brand new stadium, unheard of at the time. And also, we're now under the management of Mick McCarthy, rather than Bruce Rioch. The previous two games were under Sergeant Major Rioch. Mick McCarthy, the Brutus, had stabbed him in the back and taken over from him in a players' rebellion. And they'd installed the Mick McCarthy. Mick McCarthy's an odd man. And how does he sit in the pantheon of modern-day management for you, Ryan, Mick McCarthy? I always think he's overrated, personally.
He's not a great manager. He's all right. He did okay at Wolves. I mean, they ended up getting relegated after he got sacked. He did okay there. He did an okay job at something. Like, he's never set the world alight, you know. He's quite a steady pair of hands. I mean, Ipswich fans obviously detest him, but they got relegated as soon as they sacked him. So, like, you know, he clearly was doing a job there in terms of keeping things together. He's instrumental. He's not necessarily, compared to his like contemporaries, you know, players playing at the same time as him. I don't think he's as much as a footballing dinosaur, you know, as some, you know, like how Steve Bruce might be ridiculed now at Newcastle. I don't think he's in that sort of category, but he's not really like a football philosopher. You know, I think he's been quietly pushed aside from Ireland. Now they saw his contract out despite the Euros being postponed. So he's gone from there now. And I imagine that will probably be it for Mick McCarthy in terms of management. I can't see him coming back into a club, because he'd probably have to go back to League One or League Two level. I can't see a Championship side bringing him in. So,
no.
You know, maybe with his CV, he'd be a bit insulted by that, but I can't see him coming back in the game.
And this YouTube footage is of a wonderful win, 6-0 win over, I think they were struggling, Notts County side. I think they were on the slide at this time. The Notts County in the past had been a big club. They've been a first division side in the 80s, I believe. But they're on the slide at this point, and it shows in this game, really, because their defence was quite exposed. But this is probably peak Mick McCarthy, and it was a bit like, I always imagined that he was managing Bruce Rioch's squad, and if you could somehow merge Mick McCarthy in with Bruce Rioch, you might have produced a balanced kind of manager. There's another game online, which we might do another day, where we beat Brentford 6-1 in front of the cameras. I was there that day. Some of the most exhilarating football I've ever seen a Millwall side play at a diamond formation. But this gives you a good taste of it, how good it was with Mick McCarthy managing somebody else's squad, really. Some great Millwall names in the team, though, Mike.
Yeah, still arguably. I mean, I know you had David Ford on recently, who was a fantastic keeper for us, but I'll still say probably Casey Keller's the best goalkeeper I've seen at Millwall. I thought he was very, very good. And there was a very slight tear shed when he left to go to Leicester City in the mid-90s. I thought he was a phenomenal goalkeeper for us. Really, really good.
This would be the Casey Keller still possessed of a rock star mullet at this point. He hadn't lost his hair at this point in his footballing career. And he would often give a single fist kind of fist salute to the den when he achieved another shutout, as you would call it. This would be a shutout for Casey. No goals conceded in American sports parlance.
Looking at the rest of that side, as you say, though, you know, you've got Kenny Cunningham there. What a player he was.
Absolutely.
Ian Dawes, who we've mentioned before. And the way, I mean, the commentator mentions it when, like, halfway through the clip, like, just what, well, I think he says something, doesn't he? Like, what game he's having. And the way he bombs up, I mean, one of the goals he makes, this goes back to, he was ahead of his time. He wouldn't look out of place now in today's game, the way he bombs up and down the line gets crosses in.
Definitely agree with you there, Michael. Like, it's just a couple of the times you see, like you say, you see him just pushing forward. It does seem like the sort of player we'd love to have now. And it's, you know, the chat you had with him the other day, Nick, was obviously really good. And you obviously spoke your fondness for him. And it shows, really, that. And it's obviously a position that we struggled to kind of fill since. He does stand out as someone who was of particular quality in that position.
Right-footed left-back. Which I never knew until quite recently. When I spoke to him the other day, you know, he said he could play with either foot, but he was right-footed naturally. But he built a career out of being on the left side, but playing with, you know, a right-footed left-back. But wonderful, wonderful player, a most modest man. I mean, it was interesting speaking to him, because you don't know, really, before you do an interview, you don't really know what the person's going to be like. And you hope they're going to be nice and pleasant, but you don't really know, you know, until you get on the phone and speak to them. But what a wonderful, modest man. This footage is great, listeners, if you want to check this out, to show you the talent that was Ian Dawes, because he's got almost a pretty free run down the left side in this game. The county defence isn't really up to par. And, you know, I don't know about you, chaps, it's one of the real standout things from this footage is how good Ian Dawes was coming down that left side.
Well, I think one thing that stands out for me, again, and I mentioned the first one, is Alan, the two goals he get. Again, really, really surprised me how good he is. The first one he takes, I think it's Dawes who brings it up the pitch. And he kind of controls it around the defender and then opens up his body and curls it into the bottom corner.
Yeah, do you know what? Funny thing you say now. I've got my notes. Sorry to cut you off there, Ryan. I've just interjected. I've even wrote here in my notes, Malcolm Allen opens body beautifully. I mean, that's if that's anyone in the top four or top five these days, that'd be shown multiple times.
The quality finish. And even his second, which was Millwall's fifth, where he gets it crossing from the left and he controls it with his right around the defender. So his first touch takes it with the ball on the right side defender. He runs around the left and finishes with his left foot. They're just two exquisite goals, really. Like, so after watching the highlights from the Wednesday game as well, I just couldn't believe how good he looked.
Yeah, really. No, brilliant. And it's interesting to look at this stuff because it reminds you and it refreshes your mind, your memory as to how good these players were. I'm going to just wind back slightly on the same theme, though. Opening goal scored by John Goodman, which is just a straightforward finish inside the six-yard box. But John Goodman, very interesting player. I believe he's a fitness coach now, and I think he's involved with the club still in a kind of a contractual fitness coach kind of way, dietitian and so on. But John Goodman was signed, a bit like Neil Harris was signed from non-league. John Goodman, I think, came in from Bromley for a paltry sum. It might have been 30,000, but I checked that. Very fast player. John Goodman, very quick-paced striker. Known as Elvis because of his hairstyle and his dark, swarthy, dark good looks with a swept-back hair.
Allegedly as well, Nick. Allegedly. You may have heard this as well in the terraces and the stands, but wasn't there a rumour that when he was told he was going to Wimbledon, he got a bit teary because he didn't want to go? Well, not didn't want to go, but he was enjoying himself at Millwall a lot because he went about the same time as Ben Thatcher, didn't he?
Yeah, we were broke. I think we had to sell Kenny Cunningham. Goodman went and Thatcher, I believe. I think it was in the seasons after the move to the new stadium when the club was nearly bankrupted and we were kind of heading down the road towards administration, having lashed out some wild spending to get there, you know, on various Russians and Scotsmen and alcoholics and all the rest of it along the route to get there. But I think that we had to have what they call it, a fire sale of talent to keep the club going. And I think Goodman wanted to leave. He remains very well thought of. He went to Wimbledon in their Premier League days, I believe. And he was a great player and a good opening goal. And then, as you've said already, chaps, great run from Ian Dawes to find Malcolm Allen, who kind of shimmies past the what little central defence there is for Notts County in this game. And it is a fairly ramshackle-looking county side. But one player I do want to take both towards is a player called Phil Barber, who then gets the third and fourth goals. This was probably Phil Barber's heyday, really, because he used to get some horrendous abuse from terraces. Phil Barber, it'd come from Palace. We used to have a thing for signing Palace players, and I didn't mind Phil Barber, and he kind of stumbles through the central defence and slots away quite a nice finish for the third goal. But he used to generate great antagonism on the halfway line, and you can picture some of the abuse that would come his way for being a slightly lightweight ex-Palace utility midfielder of no great distinction, whereas Alex Ray would look like he could hold his own in an Old Kent Road brawl. Barber looked like he would, would be more at home in the art class or something, you know. I didn't mind him. I quite liked him, but he used to generate some stick. But this was one of the best performances, I think, from Phil Barber that I remember seeing. And he used to have his own chant. I don't know if you know the Phil Barber chant, Michael. Would you remember this?
No, please entertain me and the listeners and Ryan. Go for
and
it.
Ryan.
On three.
Ooh.
One, ooh. Two, three.
Ooh, ah, Phil Barber. Ooh, ah, Phil Barber.
We'll cut that bit out.
No, I'm leaving. This is historical content. One day I'll be gone from this planet Earth, and I'll be around. But these podcasts will live on behind me. This is my legacy for researching.
Can you imagine on the tombstone? Here lies Nick Hart. Ooh, ah, Phil Barber.
Ooh, ah, Nick Hart.
In thousands of years' time, they'll dig up these podcasts and they'll say, what was this thing called Millwall? And who was this Phil Barber? And they'll find this episode and they'll know 55 minutes and 58 minutes, Phil Barber, slots us 3-4 in the space of a couple of minutes. Games over for Notts County. Just 6,600 in the den to watch this. There's another goal for Phil Barber, just gone in.
One notable thing from the game I do want to point out is the spectacular kit. Really big fan of the kit we're wearing.
Yeah, that's so good.
The Fairview kit was gorgeous, lovely kit. That was one of my first Millwall kits. I absolutely loved that kit.
I've been seeing, you know, I think with people with time on their hands, I've been seeing a few concepts of future Millwall kits going around Twitter, and I think a lot of people were leaning towards getting the lighter blue back. Away from the Dundee blue that we've had for the last few years. I think a few people are kind of watching back for all these nostalgia packages you're putting out, Nick, and I think they're getting a bit teary-eyed.
Nostalgic for the royal blue.
It'd be interesting to see if the club would bring it back. I think that might be a bit of a popular move, because we did have some really, the Captain Morgan ones, the South London Press kits, the Lewisham Council ones. We had some really iconic kits in that colour. You know,
we did. This was a Buxer made kit. Although it just reminds me of your club shop update, Michael, because I do remember that at the start of this season, by this game, this is September the 19th, so we're now in white shorts, which I think worked quite well. But I can't remember if we had dark blues. We had blue shorts to go with it as well.
I
think that's because Buxer hadn't supplied them. We had to take the field today. We changed short colours, so it was a blue to white or white to blue.
White to blue on the historical kits I'm looking at online. It's white start and then blue for the late part of the season.
I think that's because Buxer were taken by surprise that the football season started in August and that we would require the kit that we'd signed up for. But no, fantastic shirt, Fairview. Great badge, great kit, great look. I quite liked it with the white shorts. It was a good turnout. So, just watch the fourth goal, which was the fifth goal. Sorry, the Malcolm Allen goal, Ryan, that you've mentioned already. A great take and kind of deft touch to take it away from the defender and slot it in for 5-0 on 70 minutes. And by this stage, the game was just how many would we get? And we would get six, because the sixth goal was a goal by Tony Dolby, who was a local boy, and I think his family are Millwall fans. Actually, the Dolbys are unknown Millwall fans. Let's read out the Millwall team this day. Casey Keller, Kenny Cunningham, Ian Dawes, Andy May. Andy May was the linchpin of the Diamonds, which was McCarthy's genius. Replaced by Paul Holsgrove in the 90th minute. Colin Cooper, great player. Came to us as a right back from Middlesbrough, played with us for two seasons, and I believe, if memory serves, was player of the season. Great, great, great player. Well thought of still. Colin Cooper is always welcome at the Den. He's a tremendous free kick on him. He could strike free kicks from outside the penalty area with aplomb. Keith Stevens, Andy Roberts, Tony Dolby, Malcolm Allen, John Goodman, and Phil Barber. Great era. An enjoyable time to watch football at the Den. It was the last season of Coldblow Lane, and we played some really beautiful football that season. It was quite a nice tribute. It was a shame, actually, the very last game at the Den was such a flop, because we played some really, really nice stuff in that season under Mick McCarthy.
I have to say as well, though, I think we've downplayed Malcolm Allen's touch leading up to that sixth goal. The way he brought that ball down was phenomenal, wasn't it?
Well, it's interesting. Listening to Ryan earlier on, and just seeing it myself now, you forget how good a player he was. And it's, you know, that's the beauty of YouTube, because it does bring to life these players and games from the past. And it just, you know, it's a reminder, or it's a history lesson that shows what great players we have had at various points in our history. And this was a wonderful day, shown on the I don't know if it's shown on the big match or not. It's certainly got that had a look of a kind of a end of season video. I don't know if this was a TV game. I know certainly the Brentford game's a TV game that followed with another 6-1 win, but I'm not sure if this one was a TV game or not. But it remains a great day, 6-0. I can't think of any bigger wins. I've never seen anything more than six. Have you seen anything more than six, Michael? I don't think we've ever scored more than six.
Do you know what? I don't know about you, Nick. I'm used to teams maybe once a season scoring six against us. like we had with Rob from 1 year and Watford and all that. But I can't remember last time we scored six. Definitely not. But this also sort of in a way goes back to what Ryan was saying earlier on with Sheffield Wednesday. Again, it's how era has changed, because Notts County, you know, they up until recently they were quite a big team. They've obviously got that history of the oldest football league team in the world until they got relegated. And you know, they had that historic
decent
league
team.
Exactly. They had that historic league with Juventus. And you know, looking at them back then, to see them in the second division or third division, they weren't out of place that high up the leagues, were they?
No, I mean, woefully mismanaged as a club, and that's now produced a very sad situation, really, that they're in the National League. Meadow Lane is one of the great names of English football. They're the oldest English football league club. No, they're not at the moment, but for me, they remain so. There's some strange thing going on. I don't know if you picked this up, Ryan, that Crystal Palace are now trying to lay claim to being the oldest football league club now, but some spurious claim on the original Crystal Palace Football Club has nothing to do with them. But that's a typical Palace kind of move to try and lay claim to somebody else's history, and I think they should be
to constantly reinvent their history and, you know, redesign their club as much as they like.
Treat that with the contempt it deserves. Notts County are the oldest English football league club, and temporarily in the National League, but they will be back, I believe. Funnily enough, Meadow Lane is a ground I've never been to. I've never been to Meadow Lane. I've been to the City Ground, Forest. But Meadow Lane is just across the River Trent, and I've never been to that one, so it's one that I want to go to. So we need Notts County to get back into the Football League, and at some point maybe we can get the Lions and County to meet again, because they're one of the big names, and as we've said a few times, their black and white stripes went to Juventus, and you know, that's, if that's not power and influence, I don't know what is. You know, you give your kit colours to one of the great names of world football. So big up to Notts County. Big thank you to you both chaps. I hope you enjoyed that, Ryan. Do you find that interesting? Look back at these historic images.
I do like the little nostalgia trips, especially, like I said, the ones before I was born, things like that. It's interesting to look back at these players that are names you know but don't get to or haven't witnessed as much. So it is good to look back and obviously unearth some old players and then paints a nice picture of when people talk about things, you know.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. You, when you say to Ryan, is it nice looking down, you know, looking back in history and then saying, Michael, are you happy being an old bastard remembering games you watched when you were young? Thanks, mate.
Anytime.
It's getting a bit late, isn't it? It should be bedtime soon.
The wife just made the Horlicks for me.
Come on, this show to be insulted. Wonderful stuff. Ryan Loftus and Michael Avery, big thank you. Thank you to Fleur Sean for suggesting the idea. If listeners would like to watch any, it's got to be on YouTube. If you want to dig out any other footage on YouTube and make a suggestion, do email us. Always interested, and I'm sure I can rustle up the chaps to watch it and talk about it afterwards. And we're missing Harry at the moment, so big shout out to Harry, who's engaged in war work of a national level that we can't talk about. So you know, well done, Harry. Get you back on here. Maybe we'll do one of these shows with you soon, mate. Thank you, chaps. Thank you for taking time out. And I think it's only remains for one of us to say bye for now. What's to say bye for now?
Bye for now.
Achtung Millwall and the Real Millwall Fan Show are the number one Millwall podcast, and we want to hear from you. So get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts, your views, your rants about all things Millwall. We've got email, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. All one word, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us and leave us a voicemail on 0208 144 0232. That's 0208 144 0232. Leave us a voicemail. No human will be involved in the receipt of your message. So give us a shout, tell us what you think about all things Millwall, and the best messages will be read out on air.
Achtung, Millwall.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.